Hello, meet Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics in books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.
Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers. Lose the wizard hat. And ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of Oh, Thank You, I Hope You Kept the Receipt, Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad. Clever intro here. We are the movie segment. We are Geek Cave Podcast. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also brought to you by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the posted paid envelope for a new one, or keep it forever and pay a lot less than in-store prices. Plus, right now you can buy an arcade one-up arcade cabinet from the Gamefly store. You can get up to $50 towards any used game, collectible, or accessory. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Justin, I have been incredibly busy lately trying to put together this segment, and I've been neglecting my social life completely. I'd like to live vicariously through you, if I may.
You may.
You wanted the best. You got the best. The hottest band in the world. ABBA!
Pilot Party!
Pilot Party! It's amazing how he gets these bands.
It is, really. I hope that it's not coming out of the general budget, because I don't know if we have the general fund budget for it.
Well, you know, I work connections. And besides, they're only on there for like, 10 seconds. So, you know.
I really hope you didn't blow out your throat doing the intro.
No, I'm good.
All right.
I hired the announcer, too. I'm good.
Okay, if I did that, I'd need a lozenge. Anyway, carry on.
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. And why only the first episode? Because one is the loneliest number, and this time of year, nobody should be alone. You know what I've always thought the Lord of the Rings trilogy needed? Gandalf to be 100 times sassier and insult Gimli every chance he got. But since that won't happen, I'll settle for Vicious. Running for 2 seasons in England, it starred Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi as Freddie and Stuart, an elderly couple who have been together for 50 years but endure a love-hate relationship.
Oh. I love this show.
Okay. All right.
So the series starts with Stuart taking a phone call regarding the death of Clive, an old friend. His high-pitched nose wake Freddie. Upon hearing that it was Stuart's mother on the phone, Freddie asked if he finally told her about them. Well, it hasn't been the right time. It's been 48 years, and it's never been the right time. The bickering is halted when the doorbell rings. This surprises and alarms them, since it's not calling hours. Who would just go around ringing people's doorbells? When they open the door, their moods change when they see a strapping young man who introduces himself as Ash. Yes, that is a real name.
Ketchum? Is it like the Pokemon crossover I've always wanted?
No.
It's Lee Williams.
Oh, okay.
He's there to see about the apartment for rent. Freddy instantly becomes smitten and begins to figure out if Ash is, quote, one of the family. Stuart is clearly annoyed and tells Ash that the apartment for rent is next door. Ash excuses himself to the restroom when Violet shows up to pay her condolences of Clive. Apparently, Freddy and Clive used to have a fling in their 20s. When she hears about Ash, she becomes distraught with the fact that he might attack her. When he returns, her mood changes and she hopes he does. Ash leaves, and the three friends plan a memorial for Clive. At the memorial, Freddy goes on and on about how he was probably the love of Clyde's life. As he reads one of the love letters from Clive, they realize it was actually meant for Stuart. The bickering resumes until Stuart leaves the room. Later that night, more bickering until they make up. The phone rings, and it's Stuart's mother. Another friend has passed away. Just before the credits roll, Freddy exclaims, "Shit!" It's just the right amount of silly and doesn't seem to take itself or anything for that matter too seriously. McKellen and Jacoby play off each other perfectly. As for the future of the show, as the show goes on, more and more people die. Then Freddy notices a pattern. Someone has been killing their friends. It turns into a mystery as they try to figure out who's behind it. Turns out it's Violet. She's jealous of all the men Freddy has had, and she's eliminating the competition. And if she can't have him, no one can. And just as she's about to attack, Ash opens the door, accidentally knocking her out. The day is saved, and the bickering continues. I give it 4.5 sassy Ian McKellens out of 5.
Man, just one sassy Ian McKellen is enough. Imagine 4.5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how good it is.
Thank you, Justin.
Hey, you're welcome.
So we've done this a few times, the four R's, and well, there are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life. Some are relegated to the dustbins of history. This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of history and asks, should we review it? It was good then. The original's just as good now. Should we reboot it? The idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it? What are these characters doing after a couple decades of growth and development? Or refuse it? Chad, you suck. In the spirit of the 90s, this show started with a story to explain things, so I'll just quote the story. So this is how it all began, the true story of two good friends. Since the age of 5, it's been their dream to run a starship as a team. Well, everything was going cool till a minor mishap in flight school. They bought a ship with their refund, and now they're having fun as homeboys in outer space. Yep. Mercenary brothers, down for one another. There's no mission that's too tall. Ain't no problem they can't solve. So climb aboard this space hoopty in the 23rd century. Homeboys in outer space. Homeboys. That's right. Airing on UPN, Homeboys in Outer Space told the story of Morris and Ty, two Han Solo characters who fly around in their, check notes, space hoopty. A starship that is part lowrider and part semi that has an onboard computer named Loquacia. The two of them go on adventures together, taking some abuse from Ty's brother Vashti and mostly getting shown up by bounty hunter Amma. With James Doohan as a frequent guest star and George Takei showing up in the final episode, you might be wondering, is this a spoof of Star Trek? Well, let me put your fears aside. No, it is not. This is a blaxploitation of Red Dwarf. Which somehow makes it better and much, much worse. So I'm going to give you just a rundown of one episode. One episode that I think will give you a fair assessment of what's going on in this show. It's from the episode called The Pleasure Planet Principle, or G Marks the Spot. It's Morris's birthday, and Ty's forgotten to get him a birthday present. Again. But Ty's tickets for his vacation to the pleasure planet of Fallopia arrive on the hoopty, and Ty pretends that he bought the vacation for Morris. So they arrive on Fallopia and find that it is a lush planet full of beautiful women. Morris is thrilled that Ty got him such a generous gift, and Ty is incredibly frustrated that he's going to miss out on a weekend filled with pleasure. Back on the home ship, the Jupiter 2, the android, called Andrew Lloyd Wellington III, hears that Morris and Ty have gone to Fallopia and expresses his condolences. Why, you may ask? Well, he explains that the Fallopians lure men to their planet only to mate with them and then throw them into a volcano. Well, back on Fallopia, Morris is getting settled into his room, Ty doesn't want to leave, and Morris finds out that Ty lied to him. He originally bought the vacation for himself, and he is furious. Well, Ty apologizes, he leaves Fallopia, and back on the hoopty, Ty watches some Fallopian TV and sees that Morris is about to be thrown into the volcano. So Ty disguises himself as a woman, sneaks back to the planet, rescues Morris, gets captured, and then Amma shows up and rescues them, only after being told that she would have to mate with the annoying one in order to prove her loyalty, and so she helps them escape. After all that, what say you? Should we review this, reboot it, revive it, or refuse it?
You know, I initially doubted you when you started to describe this program to us just now. I initially thought there is no way that we as a species are that stupid that this would be a show that would get past the drawing board, and that someone somewhere with an IQ of 5 would say yes, make this show. But you are not lying.
No.
I looked it up on multiple sites while you were giving us that just now. I verified. I trusted, but I verified. Actually, I distrusted, but then I verified anyway. No.
You can watch the first few episodes on YouTube.
I'm not going to.
You shouldn't.
Yes. Yeah, just put this thing in the transporter bay. Wait until a fly lands on it, and then transport it all to the sun. So that way, when it comes out, it's still only slightly better than it was when it went in right before it gets burned alive.
Are you sure you don't want to watch the episode where Ty and Morris crash land on the planet Caucasia, where they're worshipped as gods?
I want nothing to do with this show. But that right there were words. Those were words. No. Refuse. If I see this show coming down the street, I'm crossing the street.
This show could be laying beaten in a ditch, and this, you will not be the Samaritan. Huh?
I would be one of the other guys who walked right over this show. This show belongs on a list. But not a list of best shows.
I was going to say it is. It's on the 4-hour list.
Oh, it's on a list, all right. No, absolutely not. I don't want this show within 500 feet of me.
What'd you think, Justin?
About 3 or 4 lines into your introduction, it hit me what you were talking about. I already knew this existed. I have memories of this show. And I was never the target demographic for this show. And so I'm going to refuse comment.
That's a refuse is what that is. He's just afraid to commit.
This is it's bad.
Unlike Darren's blatant showism.
Wow.
The thing is I don't know if there's any topping this. I don't know if there's a show that I could come up with that is worse than this to offer as an example of something to refuse.
Yeah.
I'll look, though. Maybe we'll find something. Until that time, okay, we'll avoid the YouTubing,
yeah,
you know, homeboys in outer
and,
space.
And for the record, it's not that I'm not part of the target demo. I love sci-fi. This just sounds like a steaming pile.
Oh, this is distilled early 90s.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Trailer Park Roundup. There's not a lot of trailers coming on right now, but we'll get to some of them here.
Man.
Transformers Rise of the Beasts. So, confession time, guys.
Mm-hmm.
I knew about Transformers growing up. I mean, how could any kid of the 80s not?
Right.
But I never watched them.
Okay.
I never watched the cartoons. I didn't watch the movie. Optimus Prime's death was never part of my development. So I say this next thing with that background, how can movies with so much potential so consistently be a letdown? Animal robots now?
That's fair.
How much milk is this cow going to give?
Beast Wars was a fun series.
I'm going to trust you that it was, but yeah. I mean, King Kong Prime just didn't do it for me there.
I was stoked for it.
Well, I hope kinda was
too,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably bad, but I was fun for it. I mean, Bumblebee was good, so.
So, the next, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, gives us a confused trailer in which we have what looks to be the death of various members of the Guardians sitting alongside the usual sarcastic hijinks and one-liners that Chris Pratt is known for. Don't know what to expect from it yet.
I am fully expecting Drax to die.
Well, he did have a giant hole in his chest in one of the scenes.
Well, I'm just thinking,
is a
like,
good fake out to not killing him,
right? But this Dave Bautista has said this is his last one, so I'm expecting someone's gonna die.
I was kind of thinking it was gonna be Rocket.
Yeah, I could see that, but like you tail off the cute fuzzy one, and like people might be coming for James Gunn's head. So I'm going with Drax.
No, he's moving to DC, so.
And it's okay there.
Well, because what happens next is that Howard the Duck will take his spot on the Guardians. Or Cosmo.
Yeah, Cosmo I'm good with.
Cosmo is good boy.
Yeah.
Cosmo is good.
Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Yeah, it's an odd-numbered Indiana Jones.
It's going to be good, then.
It's got to count for something, right?
Yeah.
John Rhys Davies is back, so, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was only in 1 and 3, so...
Mind Cage. John Malkovich movie feels like a cross between Silence of the Lambs and Seven. If they balance those two things out right, it's going to be a heck of a ride.
Okay.
But probably also be super gruesome. Speaking of gruesome, Christmas Bloody Christmas has one of the best opening lines to a preview. I'm going to watch this movie based just on this line. The U.S. Defense Department has spent over $1 trillion on the most cutting-edge robot technology. Introducing Robo Santa Plus for the upcoming holiday season. Terminator Santa with a dose of Gorerfest.
So
sure,
they,
it's probably funnier than scary.
So they watched Futurama.
Oh boy, yeah. Did they ever. High Heat. Don Johnson makes some bad deals, so his ex-KGB chef wife has to square it up by killing everyone that comes into her kitchen. I love these movies. Super Mario Brothers movie. The second trailer came. Yeah, every voice actor's still pulling their weight, except for Chris. There's so much fan service in this movie that I think they're either committing to sequels or hoping that by creating this spaghetti of a film, they won't have to make one. It looks fun, but so does Sex on the Beach, and sand and seawater don't mix well with that particular activity.
I will say that, yeah, the trailer... to me, it comes across as we don't know if we're going to get a sequel, so let's put it all in this one.
Mm-hmm. Night at the Museum, Kamun Ra rises again. Funny enough, few dark jokes enough to keep my interest. Strange mix of standard script and Disney afternoon. Don't know what to do with that. Definitely a spot there where you have Joan of Arc and a caveman, and somebody points out, like, the caveman discovered fire at age 11. He says, fire hot, and Joan of Arc definitely says, I know what you mean.
Yes.
On to some reviews, because I watched a bunch of things. Willow, episode 1. They got the world right. That's the main thing. They got the world right, and they got the characters and the actors to play them. our main character apparent in the early part of the first episode, very tropey. And as an adult, I kind of hate her. But here's hoping that the character grows into her role, because eventually she's got to, or they've got to kill her.
Yeah.
As of this recording, only 2 episodes have been released, and I only saw the first one. And I'll probably wait until the whole series is done or very close to being done before jumping back in. Tentatively, A-. Scrooge, A Christmas Carol. This is the cartoon musical version of it, with the music by Leslie Bricusse. That's the guy who wrote the music for the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder.
Ah.
And also wrote music for Scrooge, the musical, in like 1970 or 74, something like that. Anyway, this one, adaptation of Charles Dickens' classic, focusing on giving reasons for Ebenezer's miserly personality. It made his transformation a little less dramatic than one might expect. But music, voice work, the animated film, it's quite good. Very 1990s Broadway, which isn't a bad thing. Pretty easily features one of the coldest songs in musical theater, as we witness Scrooge unknowingly dancing and marching happily along down the street with a song thanking him for dying. The scary parts of the movie are appropriately scary, and while it doesn't quite rise to the heights of other versions, is worth your time if you like the story. A-. Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Mm.
What can I say about a Guardians Holiday Special that features Drax and Mantis traveling to Earth in order to kidnap Kevin Bacon to present him as a living present for Peter Quill? It's not bad.
I liked it.
There are certainly funny parts to it. But if it weren't for Kevin Bacon, this special would have fallen quite flat.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Dave Bautista and Pom Clementif are good together, but they lack the charisma necessary to carry it as a special. Is it worth watching? Sure. Watch it for Cosmo, the goodest boy on nowhere. Watch it for the opening song. And for Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
But watch it once. Realize that it was quite good enough for once, or even maybe just once a year.
There you go.
Yeah.
I would say, though, they probably should have just called it the Guardians Christmas Special, because there are no other holidays present in this movie.
That is true. Star Wars Holiday Special. Actually, a Lego Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It's Life Day, and Chewie's family's coming to visit. Poe's all set to have the best party ever, but Rey and BB-8 have traveled to another planet so that Rey can learn the secrets of the Jedi. Will she make it back in time to celebrate with her friends? Will she learn any valuable lessons? Probably. It's Life Day. I give it an A.
Yeah, I saw it like last year. It was fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
It's serviceable.
Yeah.
It does what it's meant to do.
Yep.
And it does no more and no less than that.
I mean, after the original Star Wars Christmas special, it just, they all go downhill.
Everything pales.
Yeah.
Everything pales. So, A Very Boy Band Holiday. This actually came out last year, but I didn't watch it until this year. So it's not become a yearly tradition to have this, and I blame the fickle whims of the populace. Take various members of the bands, New Edition, Boys to Men, NSYNC, 98 Degrees, O-Town, and New Kids on the Block, and put them in a contrived situation of having a Christmas party together in Sporty Spice's guest house. You've got the makings of a pretty amusing and musically satisfying Christmas special. No drama, no forced conflict, just a bunch of middle-aged to senior men with amazing voices singing some Christmas songs. The highlight of which, in my opinion, was I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, sung by Wanye Morris of Boys to Men, with commentary by the rest of the guests.
Oh, my.
Joey McIntyre from New Kids on the Block shows up with his son to sing with a children's choir, and the song's decent, but I most definitely made an established Kids on the Block reference.
Okay.
If you listen to pop music in the 90s and early 2000s, it's really a lot of fun. It's really a fun special because it's made for people our age, that 35 to 45 years old kind of thing. The music is good. You know, it is good singing and it's good holiday fare. You know, they take the piss out of themselves a little bit, you know, and a little bit out of each other. There's no special contrived drama, you know, oh, is Kermit going to make it in the blizzard or something? It's just a group of people who are all sitting around and talking and singing. And it was worth a watch. I'm just going to say it.
Okay.
It's worth a watch.
All right.
On to Wrong Answers Only. I have a question. This past year, James Earl Jones retired as the voice of Darth Vader. Now, they're just going to use AI to do that voice from now on. But assume for a moment that they have to get a human person. Who's taking James Earl Jones's place as the new voice of Darth Vader?
Wrong Answers Only.
Wrong Answers Only.
Seth Green. But he's doing his Chris from Family Guy voice the whole time.
I'm so awkward. All right, I've got one. And the beauty of this is it could be multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
Kermit the Frog.
Ah.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father, did he?
Wow. See, I was thinking Tara Strong. She does everything else.
That's true. She does, she does do everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Eddie Murphy doing his white voice from the 1980s. Now, stick with me here. This one's a little crazy. What if we got, say, somebody a little bit lesser known, like David Prowse? He was the guy who was in the Vader suit in the 70s.
That's what I thought. Wait a minute.
He's the guy who didn't have the voice for it in the first... God damn it, you guys. Ruin a perfect...
Sorry.
My computer froze up for a second, so it just...
I'm just going to have a laugh and applause sign above my head.
I can have that installed. That's not a big deal.
Morgan Freeman.
Well, Luke, get busy lightsabering or get busy dying.
Paul Rubens.
No. I've altered the deal. Pray I don't alter it further.
Now, why don't we just get Jerry Seinfeld and just be done with it, you know? What is the deal with the horse?
Christopher Walken.
Ooh. The guy who voiced Kronk.
Oh, yeah. Patrick Warburton.
Patrick Warburton. Get him as Vader.
I'm on board.
He doesn't change his voice. It's just Patrick Warburton, no matter what he does. So,
well, if we want somebody who doesn't change their voice, we should get Chris Pratt.
That's true.
Why would you want a crispy rat?
You know, I don't know. I'm just convinced his parents didn't like him.
Mickey Mouse, but the breathing is Donald's noise.
Join me on the dark side. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Wow.
I like it.
That could not have gone better. Thank you, guys. That has brought some much needed levity to my holiday season.
Yeah.
Prost.
All right. I guess it is time for the random movie review. So, Kent, are you?
Oh,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Sorry.
Been a year.
One more thing.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, so how many of you have seen The Godfather?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, so that cat from The Godfather, you know the one, is actually a stray that they found outside the studio the day of the shooting. You see, director Francis Ford Coppola found the cat outside. He just handed it to Brando before the shot. And the cat loved the actor so much, it stayed in his lap. It purred so loudly, the crew was afraid the noise would drown out the dialogue.
I don't know why this cat smells like crap, but he's a good kitty. He's a very good kitty.
Yeah, I figured a little bit of wholesome trivia for you this time around.
We'll do a bonus fun fact. Luca Brasi, who's in that open, was not actually an actor, but was a member of the Italian mafia, yeah. who was there as kind of a quality control,
mm-hmm.
but was basically given a role in there, and all of the practicing that he did and the mess ups and so forth were because he was so nervous to be in that room with Marlon Brando that he legit flubbed his lines and nobody wanted to have him redo it.
I love yes. it.
All right, on to the random movie. Kent!
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
The roll of the dice, the inaugural random movie for 2023 will be The Outsiders. Oh, goody. This one features Oscar winner Jared Leto. For this month, though, I watched Land of the Lost. I've seen worse movies than Land of the Lost. I've turned off better movies than Land of the Lost. This movie is not only bad, it is also somehow childish and offensive. This is a movie that is trying everything in its power to be funny by relying on the perverse, the homophobic, the sexist, and the gross. So here goes. Rick Marshall is a rather arrogant paleontologist being interviewed on the Today Show with Matt Lauer when he says that the key to solving the energy crisis is time warps. When Lauer quotes Stephen Hawking as saying that this line of thinking is nonsense, Marshall ends the interview and attacks Lauer. 3 years later, he's disgraced and working at the La Brea Tar Pits giving a presentation on tachyons and their importance to time travel to a bunch of children. When he asks if there's any questions, the only question of merit is, did dinosaurs have boobs? Because it's funny. When he's approached by Holly Cantrell, a doctoral candidate from Cambridge who inexplicably finds the guy brilliant, she shows him a fossil that has an imprint of his own cigarette lighter. Is 65 million years old, but here's the imprint of your $10 Zippo. Marshall decides with this proof that he should finish building his tachyon amplifier to find his time warps and prove his theories correct, because the last 3 years apparently has just been a spiral into working at the La Brea Tar Pits.
Sure.
By the by, we are now past all the best parts of this movie.
Oh no.
Everything beyond this point is just one big old swirl around the toilet hole.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Holly finds Marshall the next morning in a food coma, having eaten 14,000 calories, so that he can muster the courage to turn his device on. She turns it on briefly, and we get to hear both a bit of a chorus line soundtrack and our first homophobic joke of the movie.
Oh, good.
Yay. She convinces him to go to the cave where she found strong tachyon energy. And though he says he's not kitted out for an expedition, she says it will be routine measurements because foreshadowing is done with a sledgehammer in this movie, not with a scalpel. Arriving at the near-deserted desert location, it is a lost-and-forgotten tourist attraction where Danny McBride, doing his absolute best to be the absolute worst, greets them. From racist fireworks to sexist tourist mugs, this guy eventually takes them on the adventure into the cave where Marshall manages to turn on his tachyon amplifier, triggering an earthquake, opening a time warp, and pulling themselves in. That's pretty much how it goes, and it's very action-packed.
Okay.
Once there, they travel a bit in a desert before saving Chaka, a Pakuni, from death. And engaging in some jokes about touching Holly's breasts, because it's funny. At this point, I started apologizing to my spouse for asking her to watch it with me. They wind up in the lair of an intelligent T-Rex they nickname Grumpy, who decides he doesn't like Marshall for calling him stupid, because Marshall keeps insisting that Grumpy has a brain the size of a walnut. To prove a point, Grumpy throws a walnut at Marshall, the walnut being the size of a laundry basket, because it's funny. They spend the night in a cave before meeting Enoch the Altrusian, who wants help saving the universe from the Zarn, voiced by Leonard Nimoy, with Marshall's tachyon amplifier, he can do it. And now they have to go find the tachyon amplifier. It fell off the boat.
Of course it did.
In the cave thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So the next morning, Marshall is giving them all the plan before dousing himself with hadrosaur urine after an interminable length of time discussing how he got it and how much it both stinks and stings having it in his eyes and his mouth. Because it's funny. They eventually track down the amplifier in the belly of an Allosaurus, which has boobs, and they blow that thing up with some liquid nitrogen shot from a catapult after a ridiculously long and motion sickness creating sequence that forgot that Steadicam is a thing, and instead, to get the shots, they just put the camera into a football thrower to make sure it got that perfect spiral of camera shot.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, that part's not funny, and seriously, if you get motion sick, get some popcorn over this 5 to 10 minutes. It's painful. The amplifier is found, then stolen by a Pteranodon. Marshall decides that this is a perfect time to give up, because we gotta have that thing. Eventually, he ungives up when he finds a 4-string banjo and sings an apology to the others before a parasite sucks enough blood out of him to make him pass out. He lands on the parasite, you know, spurting a huge wave of blood before falling asleep. Because it's funny.
Mm.
The amplifier is then found the next day at the top of a volcano, where Marshall has to walk through an area with a bunch of Pteranodon eggs. First of all, of course, he has to kit himself out like a Chorus Line auditioning cast member with short shorts and a knot tied into his t-shirt, because it's funny. And the eggs hatch, and we get another musical number to put the baby Pteranodons back to sleep, because it's funny.
Is it?
It must be. That's why they're doing it. Dana McBride, who plays a guy named Will, Marshall, and Chaka celebrate getting the tachyon amplifier back by getting drunk on some fruity narcotic and having drug-fueled conversations that I think are meant to help us like them, but by this point, I don't think I could if I tried. This is also the point that I stopped apologizing to my spouse because words wouldn't be enough. They'll never be enough.
Oh,
wow.
In a plot twist, we discover that Enoch is the bad guy the whole time. Marshall gets eaten by a T-Rex and eventually pooped out after removing some blockage in the lower intestine. We will spend many minutes on this in dialogue because it's funny, and the world will be saved by Will, Danny McBride, who decides to stay back in the land of the lost because... in the real world, he wasn't doing anything, and now he's found his purpose. Luckily for him, he is going to be now part of a patriarchal society in which women are objects, and somehow this is seen as a good thing. The movie ends with Marshall back on the Today Show with Matt Lauer presenting his new book, Matt Lauer Can Suck It, because it's funny, and this devolves into Matt Lauer attacking Marshall. So, I would rather watch this movie then watch Gaspar Noé's Love. But I would rather watch the Kissing Booth trilogy than to watch this again.
Oh.
The number of people who had to greenlight so much of this to get made make me doubt my ability to review movies, and honestly, I'm okay with that. If this movie is good, then someone else needs to take my job, because I would rather spend my time trying to prove strangers wrong on the internet than find out that this movie is actually a treasure. Brad Silberling is on my list. The director who started with Casper, an otherwise quite funny movie, had 6 movies over 14 years. In the 8 years after this one, nothing. It was his penance. My only hope is that he found some kind of inner peace in his flagellations. Will Ferrell should be ashamed to have his name attached to this. Anna Friel, who plays Holly, went back to England for her next project. In 1993, Steven Spielberg convinced us that dinosaurs could walk the earth. In 2001, Peter Jackson convinced us that lands of fantasy could be as real as any we've ever encountered. In 2009... Brad Soberling brought us all back to Saturday morning cartoon special effects that would make Reboot shake their heads and then give us a bunch of over-sexualized jokes to make us think that it was edgy. The only adult thing about this movie is making the decision to turn it off. In the words of William Shatner, you know the ending? The part where it stops? I love that. Don't be like me. Oh. With no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. Check out news and reviews not on the podcast on the website, geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversations. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, include You Want Me to Watch What? Week 3. Head over to our YouTube channel to see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. For Kent Harris, our lion, no longer cowardly. For Darren Wright, our scarecrow, who's all brains. And for Justin White, our tin man, who's all heart. I'm Chad Savage, our Toto, and I miss the rains down in Africa. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.